From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on a subway train where three wealthy Wall Street types are beating up a man in a clown mask. The men taunt him, make fun of his laugh. This is a man who has tried to make it as a stand-up comic and struggled. He's tried to win the affection of a neighbor. He has struggled to find the best approach to dealing with his mental illness and medication. And now, knocked down by society and literally knocked down by these men on the train, he snaps and pulls a gun. This is the story of Joker, a fictional drama now in theaters across the country. It stars Joaquin Phoenix in the role of Arthur Fleck, a man who eventually becomes the mass-murdering Joker. Our conversation this hour will focus primarily on how the film presents mental illness. And we're going to hear from the expert community on their hopes and fears over that depiction. Their hopes as in, well, how they hope the film depicts that and how people receive it, and their fears over stereotypes and more. We'll take your feedback if you have seen the film as well. Let me welcome our guest. Adam Lubiteau is the film critic for City Newspaper. It's always great to have you. Welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me again.
And also with us is Melanie Funches, who is Director of Community Engagement for the Mental Health Association of Rochester. Welcome back to you.
It's great to be here.
And also with us is Christina Mossgraber, Director of Education and Community Outreach for NAMI Rochester, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. Welcome back to you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Adam, you saw the film and review not yet out for City, but you're planning to do that?
Yes, very soon.
Okay, and I want to just start with sort of the broad sketch of the film, and then we're going to kind of get into some of the specific portrayals of mental illness and more. But in general, did you like it?
I didn't like it, no. I feel like it's a movie that takes itself way too seriously, and you can feel it trying desperately to be like a story that holds a mirror up to our ugly society. And it just, I feel like it wants more credit than it deserves. It thinks it's more provocative than it actually is, that it touches on these, you know, serious issues of mental illness and class and a number of other things, but it only touches on those things. And it's kind of window dressing for a kind of conventional supervillain comic book origin story.
We could have chosen a number of different threads that the film has, and we're going to focus mostly on mental illness and related issues this hour. But the class issue is really at the forefront of Joker. Yeah. This is a case where there is almost a celebration of violence against the wealthy class.
So
in some ways it feels like the filmmakers are, As you say, if they're trying to hold a mirror up to society, kind of offering a warning shot here. But do you think the film makes Joker into a hero or an anti-hero? How do you view his character in that sense?
I mean, yeah, I would say he's an anti-hero, but I don't think it. I know people were, you know, worried leading up to release that it was glorifying his actions. And I don't think it does that. I think it asks you to, in a number of ways, sympathize with him, but it doesn't endorse what he's doing at any point, I don't think.
Okay. And, you know, the filmmakers, Todd Phillips, among some critics, have said this is about finding nuance that too often superhero or comic book movies are about good, evil, you know, the dark and the light and all of this. And it's just not a lot of nuance, whereas this film gives you someone who, in many ways throughout the film, you may be rooting for him to turn things around, knowing that it's not going to happen for him, but at least wanting to give him nuance. That's what the director said.
Yeah.
You buy that?
I mean, I buy that was his intention. Yeah. Yeah. I don't think it pulls it off, at least for me.
Do you find much sympathy for Arthur?
I didn't. I don't know if that says more about me, but I all the way along, I felt like it always kind of depicted him as like the psychopath. And I feel like a lot of the ways, like, you know where it's headed, you know it's going down that path. And I feel like it never really, to me, it didn't humanize him enough in any real way.
That's interesting. What you're saying here, I think, and let's just kind of, let me work through this as your film student here. If this were a film that wasn't about the creation of Joker, who has this decades-long history that everyone knows he's this mass-murdering villain, if this wasn't a film called Joker, in other words, if Arthur Fleck was the character who didn't become Joker but just became a person who was sort of destroyed in his life by society and mental illness and struggling with funding cuts to the services and therapy they can no longer get, and all of these things. And these things happened. Mm-hmm. Would it be more interesting to you? And in a sense, did you feel like, I can't root for this guy because I know exactly where this is going? That's what the film is. It's Joker.
Yeah, I feel like that was a big problem going in for me at least. But I lost my train of thought. But yeah, I feel like it would have worked better if it wasn't a Joker story, because I feel like it had to take a lot of time shoehorning in the elements of the Joker that would be there. Like, it does weave in, you know, the Wayne family and...
What becomes Batman, yes.
Yeah, and I don't know, spoiler alert, later on we see the death of Batman's parents. Like, I feel like, yeah, so maybe if it didn't have feel the need to, you know, make it that story, it could have taken those scenes out and, you know, devoted them to some more development that would have made it a more interesting story on its own.
Okay, and... one other point on the review of the film. You said it's very self-serious. Is it just, in your view, is it too grim all the way through without hardly a moment of levity or sort of a break in the darkness?
Yeah, I thought, yes, it gets tedious after a while for me, that it's just that, yeah, grim tone relentlessly over the course of over 2 hours, I think. And I feel like another filmmaker, you know, you can go for that kind of grim tone if that's your aim. I don't have a problem with that, but they can find other notes to hit along the way, so it's not just kind of that monotonous hitting you over the head with the same thing for the entire running time.
Is Joaquin Phoenix gonna win an award for this, and should he win an award?
I think there's probably a good chance he will at least be nominated for a lot of things, but I don't think he should. It's one of those performances I respect. It's like, it's decent, but it's also one that you can feel the acting all the way through. And that always kind of is a drawback for me.
That's interesting. All right, listeners, if you want to join the program, 844-295-TALK. It's toll free. 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. 263-9994. A lot of people, Melanie, who we've talked to in the mental health community, have chosen not to see the movie because they're concerned about, just in their own ways, feeling triggered or impacted by certain depictions that they do know and having read or been warned about exist in the film. How do you feel about the film in general, what you understand about it, and from your perspective in the mental health community, what are your concerns or hopes for the film?
Well, I do resemble that remark. I'm one of those people who will not go see the film for my own mental health. I believe that many people have different, like, my reason for not going is I just don't go see highly violent films by and large, because I can't, I see too much regular violence on the streets of the cities in which I do my work every day to have to go pay money to get extra, right? But for many people, it's about, why would you sit and say, are we going to see these tropes again? You know, that, are we going to say that, oh gosh, he becomes this mass violent person. It must be the mental illness. You know, it, and, oh, he's great. You know, why do we depict that, all these things? And why do we do these tropes again and again and again and again? For people like me and other people who live this life every day, we don't necessarily need to hear people beating the drum so that we keep having to come and have this conversation and saying, mental health, mental illness and violence do not necessarily go together.
It gets tiresome to you?
Extremely.
Adam Lubitow as the critic, I know that there are different things that are happening in the main character, Arthur Fleck's life, but you cannot separate the connection of his mental illness that leads to violence in this film, can you?
I don't think so. I mean, I think that's the way they chose to build the story, that, yeah, there's an immediate direct connection between those two things. And I think in a lot of ways, at least the movie implies that he's a villain because he's mentally ill, and he's mentally ill because he's a villain, and so it's all kind of wrapped together.
And talk about stereotyping. You're rolling your eyes over there, Melanie.
I'm giving all the eye rolls, all the side eyes, because the fact of the matter is, we know, the data has said it, I've said it on this show multiple times, that mental illness and violence do not go together. People with mental illnesses are 12 times more likely, I'm going to say it again, I know y'all have heard it, but I'm going to say it again, 12 times more likely to be the victim of a violent crime than the perpetrator of one. 96% of violent crimes are committed by people without mental health challenges. And being pissed off at the world, being hateful, being any of those, being, you know, hating the man, are not mental health. They're not in the DSM at all.
What do you say to some of the critics who have come out and said, this is fiction. We are allowed to tell stories. It is just a movie. It is a backstory to a well-known character. It is not a declaration to society that all mental illness leads to violence.
What I would say is that when you are given a platform, I'm going to go to a different superhero out of the DC universe and into the Marvel universe. When Uncle Ben looked at Peter Parker, he said, with great power comes great responsibility. So if you want to make movies and you want to have a platform that you touch millions upon millions and upon millions, especially in a country like ours where pop culture dictates messaging and narratives around communities, you need to take that more seriously and think about what you're putting out, because people gather ideas. We as people, we as humans, we gather our ideas, thoughts, and opinions about these things from what we consume. So if you are a creator or you are a creator of content, you know that what you're feeding us. So if you're feeding me that people with mental illness are violent, you cannot say, well, it's not my fault that I consumed it because you fed it to me.
Christina Mosgraber, how do you feel about the release of this film and your thoughts or hopes for it?
I'm going to say that I was given the side eyes and the eye rolls, too. I personally find it appalling, actually. I'm going to go ahead and go there because it is exhausting in our daily fight to eradicate stigma that surrounds mental illness,
yes,
to have something like this perpetuate the stereotype and the stigma that people with mental illness are violent. And we know that is not true. And one thing that, you know, I was reading about it because I even had mixed feelings. I'm like, because I like to go see things so I know how to talk about them.
Mm-hmm.
And I came to the conclusion, I'm like, this is not a good idea for me. This
nope.
is just, and it was even like talking with Megan. I'm like, nope, I came to that conclusion. And I do like the fact, though, I like the fact that there are elements that happen. Because mental health, you know, challenges, mental illness does not happen in a vacuum. You know, there are things that contribute to somebody's mental health declining. Love that. Happy for that. Happy that, you know, there's bureaucracy issues, because we know there are, and that's why we fight so hard for people. But my concern is that all that good stuff gets overshadowed by the graphic violence and that notion that mentally ill people are violent. And unfortunately, that is such a longstanding stereotype that I think that messaging just sort of takes over everything, just from what I've read and what I've heard. And that's my concern. And to Melanie's point, I think that, you know, just like she said, when you have great power, you have great responsibility. And I think it's, yes, it's fiction, but I think that anyone who has that kind of platform and that kind of influence has a responsibility to do something that is positive or at least neutral for society, not to perpetuate these things that we're all working so hard and under-resourced working so hard to fight.
So, Christina, when you talk and echo Melanie's idea on the responsibility of the filmmaker, when the critics who have said it's just a movie, let's not overreact, when they say that, it sounds to me like your perspective as someone who works in the mental health community and works on changing stigma, it sounds like what you are saying is this movie will make it harder.
Yes. I really firmly believe that. And, you know, I think about, it's so funny because, you know, Melanie and I have both sat around this table, and I think about our conversations about 13 Reasons Why, and I think about our conversations of other negative depictions of either mental illness or suicide prevention or mental illness and violence. And we have seen actual data that these things can make things worse. Like 13 Reasons Why, there was an increase in youth suicide because of it, that they were able to trace back to that. And so I am concerned that this will make our fight harder, because a lot of people take fiction as fact. There are a lot of people that cannot separate fiction from fact. And my concern is that those people, they also have influence, and they will continue to spread the fiction that mental illness is an evil thing and people are violent.
And the fact is that there is a 24-hour cycle of information. And I'm thinking about particularly for our young people. When, you know, we could say that us as adults have enough mental agency to be able to discern and separate the wheat from the tare. But the fact of the matter is we have young people who are being, while their brains are yet developing and their sense of self and their sense of what is yet developing, that they're getting these messages. And the fact of the matter is if we were having this message that was doing a negative depiction of a different group, let's say a negative depiction of Jews, no one would ever say that, oh, you shouldn't do that. You know, that, I mean, if it's something that we knew about another group that we knew was false, that the data proved out was false, we would not be having a conversation like this. This thing would have been stopped, right? I'm not saying stopping making movies. I'm not saying about censorship. I'm saying about taking, for filmmakers and our, and these people who are content creators, taking responsibility for the content that they create.
Are there any positive depictions on mental illness that we can think of in popular pop culture films, et cetera, where, I mean, I'm sure there is Adam Lupito. I'm looking at the critic and he's going, I don't know. There must
be. It depends on what you mean by positive. Like, I'm trying to think, like something that handles, like, I feel like all stories about mental illness show the negative side, but some, I feel like there's some that do that in a responsible way that should give you, you know, shades of gray and explained things. So in that way, I think there is some positive. The first one I think of is there was a movie a few years back called Christine, which was based on a true story of Christine Chubbuck, a news reporter. And I feel like that movie handled that really well. And actually there are a lot of similarities to what Joker is trying to do. And I feel like that film did similar things in a much better way, in a way that was a lot more responsible.
Interesting. Okay. Well, I asked you because you're an encyclopedia. but I also feel like there's like a J.K. Rowling kind of thing in my mind here where some people might say, well, in retrospect, it looks like maybe Batman had depression or maybe, but he was a hero. But it's never the centered part of the story. And it's always like, well, you could see it, but it wasn't in the same way that Rowling was like, well, in retrospect, this character was gay. And you're mm-hmm. like, no, you don't get the credit for writing a gay character. And after the whole series is out, say, by the way, that character was gay. Yeah. It takes no risk. I'm sorry. That's just my.
No, no, absolutely. You are 100% correct.
Okay. So I'm being the critic here. But in the same way with positive depictions, we'd have to like strain to say, oh, I could see that. But it's not part of the story and it's not part of the dialogue. And it's not part of the character. It's just.
But I think the dichotomy of positive and negative is a false dichotomy that we're drawing. With people like me who work in and deal with and live with mental illness and mental health challenges all the time, just like anybody else's life, there's ups, there's downs. Not every day is positive. Some days I'm happy and some days I'm not. You know, and what we're not asking for only positive stories. What we're asking for are realistic depictions of what life is on both sides. There, and I'm going to do another movie. Is a movie called The Crow, where they said it can't be rainy all the time.
That's one of my favorite movies.
I love it too.
It's one of my favorites.
Yes, and so just like that, when we depict mental illness in film, it's like it's rainy all the time. You know, as someone who lives with mental illness, you've seen me. It's not rainy all the time. Now, there's some days, yes, it's dark, it's rainy, but there's other days when the sun is shining and it's great. I want you to show both sides. If you're going to tell a story, tell the whole thing.
So let's get into some of the layers here, and I want to ask all of our guests about some of the layers of mental illness depicted in Joker. And I'm going to cite Katie Gordon, who's a licensed clinical psychologist who wrote a review for Ordinary Times Online. She wrote about some of the things she liked and then some of the things she did not. She led with pairing mental illness with violence and said that should come as the first criticism that everyone's already covered here. She did say that the movie highlights the consequences of cutting access to mental health services and marginalizing people who struggle. Cutting access to service. Adam, tell us what happens with Arthur, who becomes Joker, in the film. He's been going to therapy and then something changes. Tell us about what's going on in the film there.
Yeah, there's a scene where he meets with his counselor, I'm not sure what her title would be, but she tells him that she can't provide him with medication anymore. The funding has been cut, and their meetings are going to stop because there's no more funding, and so he's kind of on his own because the bureaucracy doesn't care about him, and she even says, or about her, and that's kind of the end of the story, and that kind of leads him further down the path he's going down.
Okay, and so there's actually like a lot of layers here that I think we should explore. Number one, I was going to pull a clip from the film, but they're pretty tight. I there's nothing that I could pull with any length here. There is a scene in which the therapist says, you know, are you having any negative thoughts? And he said, you don't understand. All I have are negative thoughts. To Melanie's point, that might not be all that realistic. You're saying it's not always rainy days, et cetera.
Right. And the thing is, you could have a whole period. Now, what I want to say is it could be a period that you're in that all you're having for that period are negative thoughts. It can also be that you can be having a day where all you're having is positive thoughts. We're human. It's the experience is multi-textured and multi-layered. You know, so I'm not saying that because that statement could not be true for somebody in a particular moment in time. It's just the fact that, like you said, 2 hours of beating you in the head with all I have are negative thoughts. All it is negative thoughts. It's not necessarily what's the word I want? It's not necessarily representative mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. most people's journey.
Christina, on the subject that Katie Gordon is talking about in her review, when she says the highlighting of cutting access is at least one mark in the positive column, because this is happening in a lot of places and there are real life impacts. It doesn't redeem the mass murdering violence that subsequently flows out of the cutting of services, because the last thing we should do is equate those things. But is there at least a benefit to having scenes where the character is struggling for help and the therapist is saying, it's not up to me. You know, you're losing your medication. You're losing your services. Is there value there?
I don't know. I don't know if there is or isn't a value there. I'm leaning towards that. It creates such an extreme situation. Yes. We know that funding. You know, we fight this fight because we live this, right? Yes. We don't fight this fight because there's tons and tons of resources pouring in and it's rainbows and sunshine and glamorous and things. We do this because we live with this. And yet again, I think it perpetuates a negative stereotype that it's all or nothing, and there's nothing. We have people that come to NAMI every single day that have that kind of situation, mm-hmm. that come to the Mental Health Association. Yes. And that's what these other kind of, you know, grassroots like places are for. We're here to help you navigate the journey. And I feel like for someone especially who's never experienced the mental health system, they might not want to try. Because if they're seeing this and they're like, uh-oh, you know, I'm violent, I'm going to be violent, and oh, well, why bother getting treatment or getting help because there's nothing there? I think that actually can do more harm. It does do more harm than good. You know,
because if you put things, because people say it's fantasy, but you put fantasy and reality together. You hear that there's not, you know, we've been talking about that we have a lack of service, that there's, you know, we need more. And then you put it with this movie that this person, you know, stepped out to get help and they got cut off at the knees. Someone who's struggling to make that choice to reach out for help may say, I heard that they don't have all the services that they need, and look what happened in the movie. He went and tried to get help, and they cut him off at the knees. I'm not going for that. I'm better off where I am, mm-hmm. and then not seek service.
Mm. Right. Mm. One other thing too that you know usually happens with people with mental health is, it's not something you seek as like preventative care, or it's not something that you know is just part of routine. Usually, when people are seeking mental health care, they're in a crisis, or they're about to be in a crisis, mm-hmm. or something really bad is about to happen. And so it also kind of, you know, creates this like, oh my gosh, I'm struggling, and something even worse is going to happen. You know, it gets just like a whole cycle of, yes. of that negative thinking about what happens in the mental health system going. And again, that's something we're fighting, and we know it's the reality. And mm-hmm. we talk about it openly that yes, there are funding cuts, and yes, resources are not as readily available as they could and should be, but you lose the message that there's a lot of us fighting on the other side of that to change that.
Right. There's, you know, if like people, like you said, people come into MHA and come to NAMI all the time with these sort of things like, my therapist left, you know, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. My insurance, my therapist is no longer able to accept my insurance, and I don't know what I'm going to do. This happens regularly, but it doesn't even talk about the fact that we don't say, oh, you know, you're SOL. We don't do that. You say, we're going to stand with you, and that's we're right. going to walk with you. There's people who spend their career saying, I'm going to stand and walk with you and make sure that you get what you need one way or another. And this doesn't, this makes it sound like that this is the normal way that it happens.
Christina's time is a little short, so before we let her go, I want to read one email. A listener named Robert says, the movie doesn't show individuals with mental health as violent. Literally, he doesn't want to hurt people until he is forced to. If there was no mental health backstory, like he just snaps, would we have a different conversation? There is so much going on in this film. To boil it down as a plot of a guy with mental health who goes crazy once off his meds is a disservice. Adam Lubito. He's saying he doesn't want to hurt some people until he is forced to.
I'm trying to remember details of the movie.
I think the first time he's violent is when he's attacked on the train by the three Wall Street types. He kills two of them and then decides to basically execute a third.
Yeah, so I don't know. So I feel like that just boils down to a fault of the movie, that there's this jump for if there is a point where he doesn't want to be violent, and then he goes to that extreme.
He's not forced to go on that talk show and shoot Robert De Niro's character.
No. Yeah. He's making decisions.
I
agree.
So Robert, I mean, I'm listening, and Robert is saying he thinks there's more layers and we're oversimplifying it. And I hear that criticism. But I don't think he's forced to commit the acts of violence. He's defending himself when two of the people get shot on the train. He's not defending himself when the third gets shot. And he's not defending himself on the rest. Yeah. And he's not defending himself when he is standing up and viewed as a hero on the street, standing on a car, taking blood and wiping it up on his face to make a smile, and people are cheering. That's where I think, Robert, what I think what I want you to hear from Melanie and Christina is, the reason they are boiling this all down to that is because that's what they're going to have to deal with in the mental health community. That's going to be the takeaway, not the nuances that you see, Robert. Though, hopefully, Christina, people see it the way Robert does, which is more nuanced. You clearly have a fear that they will not, or too many people will not.
I do. I have a fear that many people, a lot of people don't go see movies to then distill them down and kind of process and boil them down. You know, there's the big like messages they take away. You know, there's that you don't like usually sit around unless you're in a, you know, film critic club or something, which I bet would be actually really fun. But you don't sit down and break it all down. You know, you're like, oh my God, did you see that scene when blah, 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 blah. And that's what sticks with people. It's that really extreme, you know, whatever the extremism is, whether it's violence or whether it's, you know, just the beautiful cinematography, like whatever it is, that's what sticks with you. And to me, what I'm hearing is that the violence is pretty intense, and it is caused in their, you know, wording or in their, you know, depiction, it's caused by his mental health challenges. And I think that people are going to miss the nuances of that.
So before I let you go, you did mention that the one good thing that you can glean is at least a depiction that there's multiple factors that lead to mental health challenge. And that at least we can uphold and say that rings more true.
Yes, absolutely. The, you know, lack of resources, trauma that someone may experience, things that they've lived through, you know, it's again, it piles on, you know, it can pile on, and there can be many layers to what happens that leads to somebody having an extreme mental health situation, which I think is a really positive thing. But again, that's a message I'm afraid that might get lost in the movie, but I'm glad we get to talk about today. And so the people who are listening to the show can hear the positive messages about this.
And people in your life who may be in that situation, they are at risk of themselves, not rarely hurting others.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, with that depiction, that may go missed here. Christina's got a split, but we're here for the rest of the hour. She's the Director of Education and Community Outreach at NAMI Rochester, and we always appreciate your perspective. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. Always a pleasure.
We're here with Adam Lubito, the film critic for City Newspaper, Melanie Funches, who's the Director of Community Engagement for the Mental Health Association of Rochester, taking your feedback as we talk Joker, mental health, and more on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on The Next Connections, we continue our series of discussions with candidates for office, sitting down with Mary Lupien and Dave Sutliff-Adius, candidates for Rochester City Council. They share their platform and priorities for the district and for the city. Then, in our second hour, an update on breast cancer research, screening guidelines, breast cancer risk factors, and more. Joined by experts, talk with you on Friday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. If I could, I'd like to bring in the engineer, Rob Braden, to kind of comment, because he had a chance to see the film last night. And I know, you know, Rob, you've got some thoughts you want to share briefly, too. So go ahead.
Yeah, it was a lighthearted romp about a young scamp who, when the chips were down,
I don't feel like that thing.
Lifted up.
You went to the wrong theater, my man.
I kind of agree with all of the panelists and you, but I kind of also disagree. I'm kind of in the middle because I think it was more nuanced than that. The scene that you just last talked about that kind of set it off. They started out attacking a young woman on the train by herself. And then because of his disorder, he started laughing uncontrollably. So they focused on him and then were very violent against him. And then when he snapped, that's when the tides turned and everything. So I do think it's a little more nuanced. Overall, I agree with everyone at the table. But and also, I've had experience with mental illness, and there's many different types of mental illness, and what they're depicting in the movie is kind of a psychotic episodes that are highly delusional and mixed with this laughing disorder that actually exists, because I've seen commercials on it where they offer medicine for it, like a pharmaceutical commercial. But I kind of agree with our movie critic where it was kind of trying too hard overall is probably my two cents.
Okay. And just one follow up for you then, Rob. When you point out that, you know, this may be a depiction of an extreme or, you know, very happily for society, rare form of mental illness that might lead to or be prone to a person becoming violent or whatever, however you want to describe it. Even if the filmmaker says, look, it's rare, but that's the story we chose for the character. Is there a concern that they may know it's rare, but the viewing public isn't getting like the psychological literature that says, by the way, what you're seeing is not common and don't generalize mental illness to be this way?
Yes, 100%. I would equate it to the 70s movie Taxi with Robert De Niro. Gritty New York City, gritty Gotham. The violence that's depicted in both movies are almost exactly the same with their sharpness, abruptness, and reality, because both movies are kind of trudging along in this like down and dirty city, and then with these little explosions of very realistic violence. But there was way less actual violence in the movie than I thought based on the hype and the advertising. But it is, when violence does come, it's very violent.
Very graphic violence that comes.
And there's no mass anything.
Did you take the classist theme to be more prominent than the mental health theme in this film?
It's hard to say. There definitely was a classist theme, and it doesn't matter if the Wall Street guys were actually murdered, because now this anonymous clown is a hero or anti-hero. I can see, you know, based on our current politics, I can see segments of a population, it doesn't matter what people do because they stuck up for the little guy once, you know, that kind of thing. It definitely does touch on a lot of mental health issues, and again, I agree that the acting was really good, but it seemed like it was acting as well. But they did portray like the bureaucracy that still happens today very well.
Well, thanks, Rob. So once in a while, we make Rob the engineer grab the microphone, sometimes to his chagrin. But we appreciate that. Listeners, if you want to continue to share your thoughts, it's connections@wxxi.org. You can call the program toll-free, 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. And I want to hit a part that that I think we might have talked with Melanie Funchess on past programs, but it's the subject of the effect of medication on someone's life. So in this film, Here's what Katie Gordon, the licensed clinical psychologist reviewing the film for Ordinary Times, wrote. I'll start with Adam's response to kind of see if you think this lines up with your criticism here. This is something she disliked. She said, Arthur worried about losing his medications with the funding cuts, but he also expressed frustration that the medications didn't help with his negative thoughts. It's true that sometimes medications can be ineffective, cause side effects, or otherwise negatively impact people. I liked that Arthur expressed ambivalence about the desire for helpful medications versus the desire to feel more like himself without medications, because that echoes some of the real concerns I've heard as a therapist. However, I didn't like that his medications appeared to act as a hindrance to joy and authenticity. In my clinical experience, medications in combination with therapy often help people to feel more like themselves as they emerge from the throes of mental illness. End quote. Did you think as a critic, was it telling when he makes the remark, you know, I didn't even really know if I existed until now?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when he's sort of referring to the fame and the things that are happening. And then he says, I used to think my life was a tragedy. Now I realize it's a comedy and I know I exist. I know I'm real. After the violence starts, meanwhile, kind of complaining about the way medication would impact him. Do you think that criticism, there's merit there?
Yeah, I absolutely do. And I feel like the whole medication issue, I've become kind of, I feel like there's so many movies that use medication that way, where people, you know, go off their meds and they feel so much more, they feel so much better. They're not, you know, in a fog, or they feel more true to who they should be. I feel like that gets used a lot in a variety of ways in movies.
That becomes cliche?
I think so. And from where it's saying that, you know, if that's not the case, like medication can be helpful. But I feel like most often if you see it used in movies, it's, you know, the answer is to chuck the meds.
Chuck the meds and be yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the message that you hear out of that, Melanie?
I found this very disturbing, because for the same thing, like, I do understand, as someone who takes medication, I understand, I take medication for a number of different things, right? No one would ever say, I stopped my insulin and I feel myself. No one would say, I stopped my lisinopril and my heart is beating hard and I feel myself. No one says this, right? So my thing is that...
I don't mean to laugh at that, but
it's
I hear the point.
You hear the ridiculousness in
yes,
it, right?
Yeah.
And so my thing is, yes, the just like with a diabetic having to get the insulin dosage right to feel your best self, just like with high blood pressure having to get the dosage right, with mental health challenges, it's the same thing. And yes, there are side effects, but there's side effects to all medications. And I'm tired of this depiction that people go off their meds and all of a sudden they feel alive. For many people, they don't feel their true selves until they find that right balance of medication and behavioral supports. But to say this says, see, I knew I didn't want to take those meds, you know, because... And it sets this precedent. It pushes this narrative that is downright dangerous.
Back to your phone calls, Jane in Rochester. Go ahead, Jane.
Evan. There's a rule or a law, or there used to be, called the Macnaughton Law. I think that's what it was back from my psychology days. And it pertains to criminal responsibility for things. And it's supposed to, I don't know how you prove it, that you were psychotic at the moment. But I know I've had a couple of very eerie instances of people who, when they first meet me, say, oh, I'm schizophrenic. And I get the feeling that they're telling me I could do anything I want, and they'll just put me in the hospital. And that's not true, if you're out there. It's not true, because schizophrenics, or whatever diagnosis you have good days and bad days. You have clear, coherent days and not so coherent. And so it's a misunderstanding that they think it's a free pass to misbehave. And I've had that experience in my life. I know it's not typical. I'm not saying it's typical at all, as far as I know. But I've had that eerie experience. And I would like some comments on that, as to just because you're mentally ill doesn't mean you don't have healthy and normal days. And would your guest comment on that rule of law, please?
Yeah, Jane, thank you very much. Melanie?
I cannot directly comment on the rule of law, but what I can comment on is the fact that having, like, what I first want to comment on is saying I don't use the term a schizophrenic. I'm bipolar, because that is a statement of who you are as a person. These are conditions that you have. I have diabetes. I have high blood pressure. I may have schizophrenia. It's something that you have. It's a condition that can be treated. And people who live with mental health challenges live very healthy, productive lives. I've said this multiple times on this show before, that, you know, when we know that 1 in 5 people walking around today has a significant mental health challenge, there are neighbors. There are neighbors. These are our friends. These are people we work with. These are the people we go to school with, that we go to church with, that we go to Rotary with. You know, so yes, people can live very normal lives. And the thing is, my thing is that if I come to you and I self-disclose that I deal with bipolar, major depressive disorder, schizophrenia, it may be not telling me that, it's not necessarily saying that I have a free pass that I can bop you in the head. It's saying that, it may be saying that I want to let you know that if there's a day that I may seem odd, you know, that, you know, don't, you know, say something to me, or do, you know, I want you to have this this awareness. But a lot of times when we take it to this other way, it makes people not want to self-disclose, you know, because there's people that I have self-disclosed about my mental health challenges with them. So the fact that if something is happening with me, at some point, you say something to me, because how many of us know when we first start getting sick, people can see, like, your eyes look dark, you're getting sick, but you're not really paying attention because you're too busy moving through your day. So I do it as a wellness technique. We just have to change the way we look at these things. And so no, mental health challenges are not a free pass to commit violence. Most people do not commit violence who have mental health. And people who live with mental health challenges live full and productive lives and have very happy days.
Terry writes us to say, searching for Bobby Fischer for a movie with maybe a better depiction, which I have not seen.
It's been a long time since
that's
I've seen
a
it,
long
but I
time.
Yeah.
That's 1990s?
Yes.
I'm trying to think
yeah.
when searching
yeah,
for
I think
Bobby
early
Fischer
90s,
was.
Like 93-ish.
All right, I'll go back to that one, Terry, when I can. I appreciate flagging that one. Darren from Upper Monroe says, the movie takes great pains to show that Arthur Fleck, who becomes the Joker, uses violence in response to those inflicting harm on him. Most of the film depicts Arthur struggling with his frustrations and emotions, reaching out for help to a system which is continually failing him. If anything, the more prescient aspect of the movie is its depiction of a society which faults those who struggle for not doing enough to better themselves while kowtowing to the cult of CEOs as our betters. That's from Darren. All right, Adam Lubiteau, does that move you at all?
No, because I feel like, I'll just go back to what I said, that it touches on those things, but I don't think it didn't explore it in a way that, it just felt surface level, that it kind of touches on those things, kind of like what we were saying about, you know, touching on the problems of bureaucracy and how that affects issues of mental health. That it felt like the director like read an article, you know, that funding is being cut. So he's like, we're going to throw in a scene. And he sort of, that'll be enough to add some context and some you know, depth. But it didn't go far enough for me.
That's a really interesting critical point here. Just because there's a scene where the therapist tells him that funding's being cut doesn't mean it's a really rich exploration of what happens in a society that doesn't value mental health treatment. Just because there's the clown mask gang is targeting the rich Wall Street types, it's not necessarily a rich exploration of where we're heading in an egalitarian society. There's better and more interesting depictions of that. Yeah. Though, Melanie, I mean, I've read in many different places, people like Nick Hanauer, who is a billionaire who has warned that the pitchforks are coming if we don't create a more equal society, because people are fed up. And I don't think he means we're going to see what we saw in the film. I think what he means, though, is some kind of a backlash that says inequality on so many different levels is not going to be tolerated by a society for very much longer here.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, Malcolm X, decades ago, had a quote where he talked about the ultimate battle is not going to be about race. It's going to be about the haves versus the have-nots, right? And so, but that is not mental illness. That's my point. Being pissed off is not in the DSM. It is not a mental illness. Thinking that society is wrong is not a mental illness in and of itself. It's not. So to tie this whole thing about feeling that society is wrong, that inequities and inequity is wrong, and tying that to mental illness and to then therefore tying it to violence, that is where we go wrong. And when you just spot on things, just do a drip here and a drip there, you run this dangerous line where if you don't give me a full story, a lot of people will make up the pieces that are not there. And so we've got to understand what is mental illness and what is not. You know, like, and I'm going to put it to a real life thing. The guy in El Paso who went into the Walmart, bigotry and hate is not, and I said it for here. Bigotry and hate are not mental illness. It is hate. And so, I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's like we've got to be careful that when disagreement on a theoretical thing is not mental illness.
So what would have happened? I was going to ask Melanie, is there any positive way that we could have taken Arthur Fleck's story? And I think I have found it in my own mind. What would have happened if Arthur Fleck did not become the Joker but became Batman? Got beat up on the train, saw all of these problems in society, felt rejected, felt himself, you know, losing touch because of couldn't get medications or funding, and decided to pour whatever he had left into this idea that I'm going to create justice in a way that, yeah, even some people might, and people in the story of Batman over the decades have questioned, you know, the people of Gotham, they don't know if he's a good or bad guy, and he's a vigilante, and he's not really with the police, he's sort of doing his own thing. But he's still the hero who wants justice. Ultimately, Batman is really only beating up the bad dudes, or the people who are doing wrong, or the people who are punching down. If Arthur Fleck became Batman, I think the story would be very interesting. Adam, you want to dip in there, or are you bored already?
No, I agree with that. I think that could be interesting, and I assume that means you would cut out the murder,
yeah,
murdering part.
I am cutting out all of the gratuitous murder, of the idea that, well, mental illness has taken over, and now he's going to go on a talk show and kill somebody. No, that's not what we have to do with this. We could channel this in a different way, and he becomes what is known as a hero. That would have been really turning the old trope Hollywood has with mental illness on its head. That'd be interesting to me.
Yeah, I'm with you. I would watch that movie.
See, that's why you and probably about six other people. That's probably why I'm not a Hollywood director. Melanie, what do you think?
I think it'd be interesting, but what would be interesting to me is if Arthur Fleck went and he had all these things happen and he says, you know, I don't want this. And that he went on this, he became a radio host and told people, no, for real, and sent messages out saying, we need to look out for each other so that's not another one like me getting beat up on the train. And that we change the culture of how we treat people and how we see those who are different. Now that would be a movie.
And again, that would be a movie that's not Joker, but kind of, that was my point earlier. Who cares? When you go to a movie like Joker, you know, you don't necessarily, you're starting at A and you're going to get to B. You don't know the path that leads to B, but you know that's where you're going.
You're not going to see Joker for warm fuzzies.
No. But I think we've explored this hour why we got to be very careful when we talk about mental health. And I know, listeners, you're going to email me and say, Evan, it's just a movie. You got to be able to create a movie. No one is saying you can't create a movie.
No.
When Melanie refers to Peter Parker and Uncle Ben and with great power comes great responsibility, she's talking about the power that people have when they can reach millions of people.
And it came from a movie.
And that came from a movie, too.
And a comic before that, but yeah.
But people who work in mental health are saying that this is going to make their jobs harder. I do think, if you decide to see the movie, I think now you've got a lot to kind of take in and keep in mind with it. And if you want to share your thoughts after doing that, feel free to email the program and check in. Adam Lubito, when are we going to see a review from you in this?
It should be up Friday.
Yeah. And what's your latest in city?
I'm covering the High Falls Film Festival that's going to be happening in a couple weeks. So I'm deep in screeners for that right now.
We're always grateful for your work and your time and your outstanding reviews and your thoughtful reviews. Thanks for doing it.
Thank you.
Adam Lubito, you can read his work for City Newspaper. Who also tweeted you? Who are you working with? Genre?
I'm starting a genre film festival, Anomaly, in November. November 8th through 10th at the Cinema Theater.
Okay, so I don't know if I'm allowed to say that given all of our associations, but, but I did because you're a good guy and you do great work in the community. Find him in City Newspaper, Adam Lubito, and Melanie Funches from the Mental Health Association of Rochester. It's always great to have you in your perspective.
It's always great to be here. Thanks.
And our thanks to Christina Mosgraper, who was here earlier, joining us from NAMI Rochester, Rob Braden, engineer, part-time film critic, and Megan Mack is the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon. Talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.